to break free. Chains that hurt us in our minds, but no more. This is a turning point.
No more searching. The light has come. He's overturned around.
Hello and welcome to Springboard, your virtual university. My name is Albert Okran. Welcome me to Ghana's foremost developmental program and that place where the greatest minds in the world converge. Springboard is brought to you by the Springboard Roadshow Foundation in partnership with MTN Ghana, the Enterprise Group, and the Ghana Growth Program, a collaboration between Mastercard Foundation and Springboard. Our media partners, Joy FM, Joy News TV, the Springboard Channel, and the Graphic Communications Group. Today, we continue our Thinkathon, exploring the power of ideas. Nations have been built with ideas. Businesses have been built with ideas. How powerful are ideas? We hope to, throughout this series, explore the power of ideas, engaging with thinkers, academics, educationists, business people, industry leaders, just reflecting on who are we as a people? What should we do differently? Examining what we do and asking ourselves, is this the best we can do? Can we revise it a bit? And we want to ask the tough questions that sometimes we all run away from because they make us feel uncomfortable. In the studios today is somebody that we cheer big time here at Springboard. We call her an activist, a scholar, and has done significant work in African studies and gender justice. Professor Akosua Adumaku. Prof, good to see you.
Thank you so much for having me. I've been waiting for this invitation. It's like, when will it come?
No, Springboard is your home.
And here I am.
Anytime,
thank
any day.
You. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
What has been happening since we last spoke?
Ooh, would I even know? These days, I mark everything pre and post-COVID.
I said post-COVID.
And this
what has happened post-COVID?
The world has been a tough place, right? Especially for young people. COVID came, then all the issues of justice, George Floyd started a movement. People started talking about Black Lives Matter. In the academy, we refronted the issue of decolonizing the academy. Painful work, which our forefathers and foremothers have already done and we're doing again. And then we're looking right now at global politics and what's going on in the US, its impact globally, even in Europe, what's going on in Palestine. So a lot of tough things, but I'm a woman of hope. My faith doesn't allow me to lose hope because there's a God who holds us, even though we don't often see the long durée, right? So I also see young people doing amazing things in spite of all odds, and it gives me hope, right? You look in the country, especially in the popular culture scene, people are doing stuff with very few resources, telling their stories, putting Ghana on the map. Unfortunately, sometimes they are on the map in other places. The prophets are not wanted at home.
Right.
You know, you go somewhere and somebody says, have you heard of, you know, this, I don't want to single some out because then it's like, these are the stars, but they mentioned some artist, you know, some performer, some young politician who is not in Ghana, but is doing their politics on behalf of Ghana somewhere. And you're like, oh, so yeah.
This, what gives you fulfillment?
Working with young people gives me a lot of fulfillment and energy because then you have hope that this may sound arrogant, but let me put it that way nonetheless. You have hope that your DNA is being reproduced, right? That people have been in your orbit, you've been a mentor, you've been a teacher, and not only have they taken it, but they've taken it further.
Right.
And it's not about competition, because if they are able to take something further that you began or you were part of beginning, it means the thing that you were doing too was good, right?
So areas like gender justice.
Gender justice, African studies vibe, you know, people being interested in telling our story, And they are doing it through podcasts and film and music, and they are known and people are citing them. Look, our academic papers, let's be very honest, how many people are reading them, right? They circulate. A few people will cite you here and there, you get your promotion. But if somebody takes, and I think Chimamanda said this, when Beyonce sampled her, she had this TED talk how to be a feminist or something. And Beyonce takes Chimamanda's work, and now it's like
it's global.
And then and I think Chimamanda said she's happy that her niece, or I think it was her niece, is talking about gender justice because she's heard her aunt's work in Beyonce's Flawless. It's like my niece would probably have never. Now am I reading my aunt's work? So. You know, young people are taking it. It gives me fulfillment, and especially because there are enough good reasons for them to not be hopeful. And if they are doing, then it means they have hope. Because when you don't have hope, you just roll over and die. When you take your energy and act, it means you've got hope. And you know, it's a good feeling.
Exciting. Let's start from the whole idea of Thinkathon. How powerful are ideas in shaping social thought, developmental programs, and just who we are as a people? How powerful are ideas?
They are the most powerful, because without ideas, you don't move. You know, you're stuck. You have to be thinking and dreaming about something in order to move somewhere. Otherwise, you're an empty vessel. People will pour things in. You'll be, you know, blowing with every wind. And I think it was Chinua Achebe who said, partly because of colonialism and, you know, how we also responded to colonialism, our history was truncated, right? We were going in a particular direction. Some other people came, moved us in another direction. And because our story was truncated, we became these almost schizophrenic people. You know, you are one leg in who you were, another leg in who other people say you should be. And he says it's like the trunk of the tree has been removed, and you've got to put that trunk back on the tree so that your story can be your story. And I mean, stories are ideas. It's either stories about what has happened that you are building on, or stories about what you want to happen. And you have to think in order to, you know, to dream up these stories. And you also have to think in order to make sense of the history, right? Otherwise, it's like, somebody did this, who cares? We're moving on. But you have to think about it. As they say, if you don't know your history, it's like, where are you going, right? So, I mean, I feel like development has to start. It starts with ideas.
Let me cite the quote that you referenced in passing. Marcus Garvey, he wrote that people without knowledge of their past history, their origin, and their culture is like a tree without roots. It ties in with what you said about
what Achebe said. That, yeah.
Almost like it's been uprooted. So in this instance where you literally have almost, you mentioned schizophrenic, you are now not sure of who you are. And in some instances, I had a conversation with your mentee,
Kuku Amamfu.
And interestingly, in that conversation, he talks about the fact that we repudiated what we have, which is beautiful, and happily embraced what other people have, and are surprised that they are also now taking what we have and are happily running with it.
Mm-hmm. And making money.
And now we are not sure.
And they are making money from the one that belongs to us.
What happened? And this cuts across different sectors.
Who is it? Ngugi puts it this way. He said, they've taken a hard drive, erased it.
Oh my goodness.
Then put another hard drive in and said, okay, now move.
Let's talk about who. Let's talk about how. And let's talk about what next. They've taken our hard drive. Who? And what is our hard drive? And what is the implication of that taking away? And how do we recover it and move on?
I don't want to sound like a scratch record, colonial, but the effects of colonialism and neo-colonialism is deep. I think of growing up, maybe Christmas, you get a can of Sweetened strawberries. It's like, wow. But we were not wowing about our own fruits, right? Of course, in my home growing up, my parents wouldn't buy these things because, like, there's banana here. There's, why are you asking me to buy this stuff? But we had been trained that something was better. You go to secondary school, those who didn't get cornflakes in their chop boxes, like, poor me, me when I go home. You know, you are even eating local foods, you are shy. When I was growing up, Ghanaian high life music was not something that young people. Now, of course, we enjoy our music. So there's something that, and some people came and told us we were not good enough. Look at our names. We were told, you know, we didn't have surnames, right? But you are going to school. We have to catalog all of you. So you've got to have the same name. Okay, so now we are, all of us, our surname is Okran or Agumako or Ampofo or whatever. So a lot of these things happened. And slowly, slowly, that you know, it's like that's the norm. I'm going round a bit, but bear with me. When the Institute of African Studies, which has been my academic home for over 35 years, was established, Nkrumah said that the institute, the fellows of the institute should study African studies in African-centered ways, because he knew that Africa was being studied in European ways, and Europeans were not studying Africa in European ways for nothing. It was so that they could colonize us. Right. So that thing has been deep, you know. I even look today at the way in which we seek other people's valorization, whether it's in their rankings. Look, we are happy that Times Higher Education says that my university is somewhere in the world. But you never move up. You will never be like, okay, you are the number one in Africa. Wonderful. You will never move up because it's their measures and their standards. And I'm like, the measures that you are using, and this has been studied, the measures you are using, why don't we get extra value for the fact that, okay, me, I'm teaching 2,000 students. You are teaching 50. You are saying that, oh, that university, the faculty-student ratio is great. So we've given them some points. How about us that we are teaching many students? Aren't we also very amazing? We are teaching these numbers of students and we are still sane, still going back to the classroom. It should count for something. But that's somebody's measure of what makes a university great, the research funding. How about us that our government doesn't give us money to do research and still we are doing research? Shouldn't we get some extra points for that? The way we'll say that the student who manages to get great WASI grades and it's in the village and doesn't have electricity. Surely that student should get better points than my child who's got electricity all year round. Parents take them to school, come back. You need extra books, we'll buy it for you, right?
Right.
It should come for this somebody's measure. And then we are excited that those people have said you are number something. So who has done it? I will say it's the colonial enterprise, which persists because there are power dynamics. And when you follow those dynamics, it always leads to money somewhere, right? So who gets the most research funding, the publications, which publisher is it? Publishing used to not be a capitalist endeavor. Now the big publishing houses, I will not mention the big ones, they have formed conglomerates. And they are multi-billion dollar enterprises. Who does the labor for them? We, the reviewers and the editors. And we are normally not paid. Will I be allowed to call it slave labor? Because we are told that it's part of our academic. You do that in the academy. You review my paper, I will review somebody else's paper. It's what we do for it. But some people are making money from it. And they will tell you that those are the top ranked journals. Why will my journal not suffer? When this young colleague who wants to get his or her promotion, they will say, oh, but you have not published in so-and-so's journal. These are the top ranked journal. Why will they? They will go and publish there because they need to be promoted. So the who now is to us. We are also recycling these other people's standards. To quote somebody else, Du Bois said we have this double consciousness because we're trying to meet the needs and the valorization of our own community. But we also have to, of course, he was writing about the US. You also need to get your valorization in that case from white people so that you can enter some door and you can progress.
So I look at areas where I think we've made some progress. You mentioned a couple of them and you mentioned particularly our music, our art. With some of these areas of endeavor, I think there is an awakening of our consciousness. I will reflect always on the fact that in my days in secondary school, probably you go to a function and the music will largely be foreign and there'll be a local slot. This time it's the other way around. Whether it's gospel music, secular music, anything, you will find the music dominated by Ghanaian music, Nigerian music, African music, and then there will be a couple of slots for so the taste buds of the average young person, African right now, is geared towards our music. It goes beyond music. Now we talked about conflicts, but now you will go to a typical cosmopolitan hotel on a Sunday afternoon, top dollar, and the food is African. From starter to dessert, and it's big, African clothing. African clothing is on the front foot now. Haven't you made progress?
We have. We've made progress. You said a lot in arts and culture, and thanks a lot to, you know, young people who were innovative and, you know, pushed it. And of course, then there's also the global capitalist desire for. You know, Black became cool at some point. Black and African became cool. So it contributed to that. So yeah, we've made significant progress, I would say. But there's so much more we need to do, because you asked about thinking. We need to think outside the box. And talking again about, you know, what has been imposed on us. Take a concept like a failed state. Or underdevelopment. Again, if we say was a failed state or was underdevelopment, everybody's mind goes to a whole bunch of countries in Africa, maybe South America, a few in Asia, right? Again, it's because of what we've been told. And nobody should misunderstand me that I'm not saying we have major problems. But it's like how it's constructed and how we imbibe it. When I teach undergraduate African studies, or when I used to teach it, I would say, why don't we sometimes look at how many mass shootings are there in primary schools as an indicator of development? Why not, right? Who wants to send their child to school with fear that they are going to be shot? Surely it's a development issue, I would say. Why don't we look at suicides, right? Who wants to see young people dying because they are taking some drugs, right? Surely that's a development issue, but we've been told that we are underdeveloped. So I like giving this example. A couple of years ago, Professor Gordon Awandari gave his inaugural lecture. And were you there? Or you watching?
We go way back.
So he was looking at, I forget the title, making some links between our resistance to malaria and COVID. And if you remember, when COVID-19 first hit,
yes,
people were like, we were fudging the data. We are saying people are not dying in Africa. Mm-hmm. Like everybody's prediction was that we should have been dying. Why are the Africans not dying? They are not telling us the truth. They are fudging with the figures. Oh, it's the sun. The sun is. Have you seen any African country people are dying and there will not be a funeral? Like, even though before the lockdowns, you hear wailing. You can't hide dead people in Africa. So clearly, we were not dying at the rates that they said. Long story short, he and his colleagues do this work, and they find this association between our resistance to malaria and how we responded to COVID-19. So it's not like we were not getting, they found so many people with the virus, right? But they were not getting sick. And yet they had been publishing this work, and people had been suspecting their findings. Of course, he's a reasonably big man and well-respected. Their work eventually, you know, this is ideas. This is thinking. If you are not strong, people will tell you that don't do this research. Don't publish it. Do something else. Climate change. And we should do climate change. Don't push this one, right? We need to set our agenda. So when you ask, have we made progress? Yes, we've made progress. Our scientists too. Every day I hear of some young scientist in Ghana, well, not every day, once in a while, who's trained their bachelor's, their master's, their PhD in Ghana and has some scientific innovation. So yes, we've made progress, but we are also struggling to get funding for our research. So many of our scholars are doing this work with funding from somewhere else. This is where our government should be coming in. Why should I get money from Foundation X or why to do my research.
This is Springboard, your virtual university, and I get to hang out with big sis, role model, Professor Akusia Adumaku Ampofu, telling us her version, her revised standard version of how we should tell our story, set the agenda, and redefine the marking scheme for Africa.
Wow.
Prof, you've been saying some things that I think are big points about ideas, and you're saying that as long as somebody sets the marking scheme, you can't top the class.
No,
you just can't.
You won't know.
How do we...
Especially when they have decided who should top the class.
Yeah, you're saying it's deciding in advance.
Yeah. And if there's some reward to who tops the class, yeah, you're not top the class.
How do we get the African voice? How do we fund our own narrative? How do we take control of how our reflections are to ensure that it is told our way and we lead the conversation instead of always catching up?
I think what we're doing now is a perfect example. So Springboard is bringing people to share their ideas, right? And because we live in an age where there's less reading going on, I think it's fair to say there's not as much reading going on, but we have options, right? So this kind of format is one of the ideal ways of getting people to rethink. And as you were sharing earlier before we came on the show, some of the work that you do through the foundation, you know, taking people to help them take their ideas into a product or a service, other people are watching. So then there's a multiplier effect that you will never even know the extent of, right? And so those of us who have something to say that is useful, not everybody's opinion is useful, but where there's something to share that can engender hope and I can do, like, okay, I'm listening. Okay, this person did it. I can also do it. And also, we have to provide resources because we are in an environment where the resources are thin. Especially for women who want to set up a business or provide a service, and young people in general, if you don't have auntie or uncle, like, where are you getting the capital to do this? There are very few places you can go and get some resources. Are you paying 20-30% interest? You know, how will I set up a business doing that? I'll never catch up. So we need the resources. And it means that people who are business owners must invest in this kind of thing, right? We do a lot of philanthropy in this country, in Africa, that is not counted. Everybody's paying somebody's school fees.
Yeah.
Everybody's paying somebody's hospital bills. Everybody's paying some funeral donation. You know, we do it all the time. We're not counting it. And then the remittances. So we are doing philanthropy, but we need to do it in a more structured and formalized way. Yes, there are some organizations and industries that have foundations, which are doing their corporate social responsibility. It needs to be everywhere, and it needs to move into the place where the science also is being done. But if me, I'm doing the kind of work, okay, somebody like Awadari needs a lot of money, but, you know, Ketuebiensa, Omamekakra, Medebeyebibi. So we need our industrialists, our wealthy people to invest in that, in those spaces where the ideas are happening. I want to publish a book. It's money. If I was, one of these northern industrialized countries, if they like my book, they'll work with me. Now, if I want to do a book here, I have to go and find the money to work with a publisher, right?
And from my days in publishing, that's a very steep climb. You know what? We'll go for a break to allow you to catch your breath and listen to some gospel reggae music. When we come back, we'll talk about, you mentioned the multiplier effect and the economist in me rose up. We'll talk about how examples of how just a little push has changed so much on the program we are doing, and come back to you and ask how that fits within the construct of the work that you are doing, and how to have a critical mass of such things, not just one, two, three, a critical mass. And then also look at storytelling, look at data, how to formalize some of the things you are doing that you are saying they are priceless assets. If they were formalized, anyone doing research anywhere who clicks on a button will see them as assets. For now, they remain unformalized, if I may use that word. We'll talk about all that. And this is Springboard, your virtual university, trying to think a bit about what you do and looking at alternative ways of doing things. Let's go for a break. When we come back, Let's push on a bit more. Don't go away. Welcome back to Springboard, your virtual university, into this conversation about storytelling, about changing narratives, about retelling Africa from an African perspective. My guest, Professor Akosua Adumakwampofu, helping us to rethink on this very special edition of Thinkathon, The Power of Ideas. Just to remind you, this is part of what we are doing to commemorate Springboard at 17 years of curating ideas, sharing thoughts about the better society, how to do things differently from how we've always done them. Springboard is brought to you by the Springboard Roshi Foundation in partnership with MTN Ghana, the Enterprise Group, and the Ghana Growth Program, a collaboration between MasterCard Foundation and Springboard. Let me bring you your Enterprise Advantage tip for today. And the question is, I don't wish for my relatives to die after paying premiums for several years with no claim. What happens? Sikanashiana, the answer is this. For the Funeral Finance Unlimited policy, you can choose a payment term of either 10 years or 15 years. If nothing happens at the end of the selected term, you will be entitled to a 100% refund of your risk premium, or have the option to have the rebate and have all relatives covered for the entire lifespan. So you can either have a refund or have the option of leaving the rebate and having all relatives covered for their entire lifespan. This comes from the Enterprise Group. The number to call 020-263-4777. Email info@myenterprisegroup.io. Enterprise, your advantage. The Ghana Growth call center number to memorize or keep on your phone is the number 030-8255-775. And that's the number for any young person, especially a young woman, excited about the prospects of doing business in the agriculture, agribusiness, and ATVET spaces. If you are enthralled by what other young women are doing and you are saying, listen, I can also do it, just call or WhatsApp that number and you will find out some exciting things that are happening all across the country. Talking about excitement, you must have by now bookmarked or subscribed to the Springboard channel just so you can watch every edition of the Virtual University or any other broadcast we might have. Just look for the Springboard channel on YouTube and make sure you are a subscriber. Prof, every week we just highlight something somebody is doing, somebody minding their own business, like the several samples we showed you. Just look for somebody. They don't need to know us. And then just throw the light on what they are doing and just give them morale.
That's right.
And for many of them, they tell us that that big break of they being mentioned, their number being mentioned, and what they do being mentioned, turned out to be the game changer for their business. And it's just about the power of an idea, something small. So before I come back to you, let me mention that today we are talking about Menest Farms. Menest Farms provide healthy bred pigs in a hygienic environment and lean pork to our valued customers. If that is what you are looking for, healthy bred pigs or lean pork, the number to call or WhatsApp is 020-011-7730. And Menace Farms will be very happy and smiling because you give them a break with your patronage. Make them happy and support Ghanaian business. Right. Prof, before we went on the break, we're talking about hope, storytelling, resourcing young people. And then I promise to get into gender, your baby. So let's talk about hope. Before we get your thoughts, I mean, as part of the Ghana Growth Program, we've been working, and I showed you samples of what young people are doing. We've been working with young people, especially young women, many of whom have not been given a chance, but really want to do something. And when we find somebody that really is serious and they show from the interactions that they want to learn, they want to do business, and there are different interventions that support them, there are career clinics they can attend for free, there are training sessions with practitioners. And then in part of the interventions also, there's the Empower 360 program that actually takes them through specialized training and gives them the tools and capital in the form of tools and startup kits to be able to go out there and try out their ideas. And from what we've observed, it takes so little
to achieve
so much. And in what we do, we also tell them, listen, there's nothing wrong with failing. Try out your ideas. Mm. Even if you face stumbling blocks, it's still worth the try. But the uptick, the determination. And it's just very, very fulfilling. Mm. And I'm sure it's confirming what many of you have believed all through the years, that giving young people a chance and giving them a little push will do so much. But let me throw in some more observations and hear your thoughts on them, Prof. It is interesting to notice that the further away people are from Accra, or what we would, if you want to call the centers of civilization, for lack of a better word, or sure, the capital,
sure,
the more determined they are, the more appreciative they are of these opportunities. And then the second observation, persons with any form of disability turned out to be our best students and by far the best businesses that came out of the first set of ventures. Why do you think it is so?
First of all, I'm going to maybe ask you and wonder about your selection criteria, because I suspect that there's some self-selection into the program. There's definitely some intentionality in how you pick. So you are already probably picking people who are highly motivated. You're picking those who are sort of positioned for success.
Absolutely.
So there's already something in the way you have constructed the program. Right.
So what it does is that before you get to the stage where you are being put on that fast track, mm-hmm, you must have engaged mm-hmm the preliminary knowledge, even from the position of disadvantage. So the first line respondents that show seriousness to uh-huh the initial thoughts there that were shared, the initial programming, you're like, this person can go somewhere.
Exactly.
And then you pick.
So you're not picking just anybody. You're picking people who show some likelihood to succeed.
Yes. Right?
By whatever criteria.
Yes.
And, you know, females, women who have decided they need an extra push. I can't immediately think of any studies, but it makes intuitive sense that somebody who is physically disabled, perhaps, and who has meant that, as for me, I'm making it, will, because of their disadvantage, quote unquote, be serious. Because they want to make, they are not waiting for a handout. They've been given an opportunity. They will be serious. Whereas sometimes people who have not had a hard time, there's a sense of entitlement. My father will do it for me. My mother, my wafa waho, whatever. I guess these days wafa waho doesn't work. you know, there's this sense of entitlement. And so you relax more. When you are like, there's nobody in this world. It's me and my God, and somebody's bringing me an opportunity, I'm likely to be serious, right? And then further away from home, I think sometimes our environment can stifle us because of cultural restrictions. And when I say cultural, I'm including, you know, every home also has a culture. Every home has its traditions, right? And human beings, we are slow to change. This is the way we've done it. If you had the SNA, you know, this is how we do it in this family. You want to do it differently, and yenisa. So, you know, moving out of that space gives you the freedom to not be judged for doing something differently. Gives you the freedom to not be afraid to fail, because we don't do it this way. Okay, right? You're free from that possible judgment. So you have more freedom to experiment. And this is why when we travel outside Ghana and we are in other places, you know, you find people doing some funky things that they couldn't do at home. If you are not supposed to shave your hair, you shave it. If you are not supposed to have locks, you lock it. If you are not supposed to have an extra earring or wear this shoe or something, you know, you're freer. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's, you know, what's happening with people who are taken out of, you know, that confinement and have the freedom to do. And then, of course, somebody is cheering you on.
Yeah.
Somebody is cheering you on and saying you can do it. Even if you fail, like you said, we are not discarding you. We will not judge you. And that's cheering. Everybody needs a champion or two in their lives.
So let's stay on that one. And you are so right about that part, because guess what? It starts from a big number of people who hear a message, a broadcast, talking to Professor Adumaku, Ampofu, anybody, it could be anything. And then out of that, we form girls clubs, mm-hmm, we form clubs of people. Then those who are serious join the club and want to hear more of this. Then the self-study. send them material translated into local languages, available, if you know, a smartphone, on boxes that they can, Bluetooth speakers they can press, and they can hear it. They can ask questions, and they can be answered from anywhere that we are. Then you see that, listen, these people, a little chance, they are responding. So it is out of that second level that you see, okay, now you've shown a commitment. So then get this opportunity. And when they do well, now they are interviewed on television and on radio, and their communities, it's like a festival. Our daughter, she's on radio. She's like,
there you go.
They feel so big. They can call you, and they just feel so happy that their lives have changed in just a short time. Prof, critical mass. Let's talk about intentionality and building a critical mass. And I'm talking this time against the backdrop of what you've done with gender for several years. How do we use storytelling, intentionality, to create a critical mass of such people? So it will not just be one person here, one person there, but several of them.
No, you said something about forming these clubs, and there's just power in numbers. You know, we're talking about critical mass. You have the clubs, they were set up. They didn't just spring up, you know, organically. There was intentionality. The clubs were set up. People learned from each other. They were encouraged by each other. And it gave them a sense of purpose. We all like to be part of a group that is similar to us, and we're doing things together. So whether it's gender or it's history or it's entrepreneurship, that collaboration, after all, when we talk about cooperatives in farming or whatever, is that doing together. You may not have, everybody may not have a huge profit margin like being some mono industry, but everybody gets something. Rather than one person getting a lot, everybody's getting a portion. And it's the intentionality of putting these groups together. And when it comes to gender issues or women's issues, working in collaboration has been one of the major ways in which change has occurred. Because you're already a minority, not a numeric minority, because we're almost 50-50, right? But you are a minority in terms of the spaces you inhabit. They have, what was I reading recently? In Ghanaian universities, still only about 8% of professors are women. So as you climb higher, there are fewer of you, and then you're the only woman in the room, and you open your mouth and they say something, hey, yeah, madam, gender again goes there. And you're like, okay, next time when I go, I'll not talk, right?
Wow.
So maybe I'll talk. But if you're a younger person, who wants to always be critiqued and criticized, right? So you need that space.
Why do we do that, by the way?
You have to ask the men why they do that.
By my man, I'm asking you why you do that. It's only men that criticize, or sometimes women too do.
Oh, that comment comes from men.
Okay.
That comment will come from men. And it will come because the woman is likely saying something that is about some discrimination or some, you know, form of treatment of women that is not good, you know. And then the men, I don't know, they feel judged or they feel guilty. It's like, oh, you every day, right? Sometimes say something nice, like every day, don't be criticizing us. Okay. And then you feel lonely because you are the only one there. And you cannot always be the only person in the room criticizing. It's like, madam, don't you have anything good to say? We've also done some good things, right? But then you are thinking of the many other things. Anyway. Point being, you need a group of people to support you. Even if they are not in the room with you, at least when you get outside the room, you know that, hey, today it was a tough day in there. You go back, they encourage you. It's either your group of other women, academics, or some civil society group, or your family, very important. If your family is not supporting you, may as well forget it, right? So these groups have to be formed intentionally. These days we talk about mentoring. Mentoring was not a big word when I was growing through my training. We've seen that some intentionality about it is helpful. And so when you form the groups that you are doing, there's some mentoring that's going on, both consciously and then the unconscious one that happens, even peer mentoring occurs.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
It has to be created and curated. And I think where the stories come in is when I hear that oh, auntie so-and-so managed to do this in 1952. I'm like, oh, then surely if it's 1989, I can also do same. She was struggling with much more than me. I'm not the only one. There's seven of us. She was only one and she managed. We are seven. We can do it. And then years later, we are 24. Surely we can do it. So those stories help to engender hope. And I think, you know, we shouldn't, hope can be, I don't want to say curated. It can be engendered. It can be encouraged. It can be activated.
The slogan of our program is Hope Day. And it caught on because the young people could relate to it. Let's talk about curriculum. For some time now, I mean, anytime people talked about redefining who we are and what is our priority in terms of what we should study in our universities, the chopping board, the subjects that we put on the chopping board are history, literature, classics, and people genuinely believe that we don't need this. I did philosophy and I read economics, sociology, and philosophy. I enjoyed all of them, but I have a special place in my heart for philosophy because
it makes you think.
Yes, it made me think in a different way.
I would
do it again any day. Why is it that we think these subjects have no place in our developmental space?
I think it's because we see development in a very instrumental way. The road we've constructed, the hospital that we built, the factories, very instrumental way. We're not thinking of development of ideas. And of course, the road that you are constructing, there's a formula to build the road. I'm not saying thinking doesn't go into it. Obviously, you've got to study some engineering and so on. There's a formula. To innovate, your imagination has to be activated. History, literature, philosophy. I didn't study philosophy. I think if I was going back to school, I studied architecture and there was no, you know, our training programs there, and architecture is one of the more diverse science, arts subjects. Well, we didn't have the opportunity to say we'll do philosophy. And I bet you if that opportunity had existed, I wouldn't have taken out. I mean, like, oh, philosophy, who does philosophy?
Yeah.
But it makes you think.
Yes.
And it can help you to dream. You cannot develop if you are not dreaming. You've got to have, how do you have a vision if you are not dreaming? Right? Otherwise, you're just replicating what others have done. There's a formula to build the hospital. Okay, let's do it. But our environment is different. We say there's something called appropriate technology. It's not everything you can pick from somewhere and replicate it here, right? And it's not just about the science of it. It's also about the sociology of it. If I'm building a well, for it to just give a very mundane example, you want to build a well in a community to help them, to help the women to not carry water long distances. Meantime, the women are going as a collective to go and collect their, fetch their water. When they go there, they chat.
And reflect on their experiences. Yeah.
They are talking about their spouses, their children, their grandchildren, their aches and pains. Mrs. C. Nenek. Now you have brought the well into the middle of the community. That opportunity for them to collaborate is gone. And now you've created some free time because the water, they were taking 3 hours to fetch it. Now they're using 30 minutes. So they're 2.5 hours left. Let's give them extra work to do.
How does stakeholder engagement help us to appreciate the appropriateness of the solutions that we profess when we go into?
100%. You have to engage with the stakeholders. Otherwise, the thing you are doing, I studied development in my master's. They were giving us so many examples of development projects that had failed simply because the people it had been created for said they
couldn't relate.
It's like, oh, this thing, we have built a market for you over there. You know, I mean, I'm selling my chips in the traffic. To think about how can I get some collaboration between those of us in traffic who are buying the plantain chips, which I don't do, by the way, and those who are selling their wares. Because if you move me over there, the person's not coming there in their car. Think about it. Find some solution to it. the stakeholders are, in this case, the people in their cares and the people selling the wares. But we come up with these solutions. Look at when we did the Momo tax. People said they will not use it because they don't want to pay. But you had anticipated, well, not you, the government had anticipated the amount of money they were going to make from it. Some people gave advice. They said it wasn't taken. Talk to the people who do the Momo, the tailors, the carpenters, you know, talk to them whether they will use it or not. They'll move to a cash economy. Of course, Momo has been helpful, but then should you do a lower tax, perhaps? Talk to the stakeholders and see. Otherwise, there's a discrepancy between what you
intended.
Somebody was telling, a young lady I was talking to recently told me, we're talking about how growing up, they will make you eat food that you don't want to eat. It's like, okay, today is yam and kontumri. Me, I don't like kontumri, so I'll not eat. Then they'll tell you, if you don't eat, well, that's what's on the table. She said she creates the menu with her children. They have decided they like kontumri, but they don't like palm soup, this, that. Of course, it's... So now you people have created the menu. Cannot say you know it, right? And you've got to create the menu, she told me, with things that can be bought in this Ghana we are in. So don't come up with some. Yeah, we can go to some of the commercial, the stores that sell stuff. It has to, don't go and see something on YouTube that you want to eat this. Tell me that these ingredients, where can I get them? And I thought, wow, if I had had this growing up, there wouldn't have been so many, I don't like this and I don't like that and I have to eat it. And they made me eat Quaker oats, or oats, I should say. And it took me years as an adult to appreciate it because I was forced to eat oats as a child. It's good for you. And I'm like, right? And then the cocoa, then the top of the cocoa has slept. Then they mix it. And then you've got pieces of thick cocoa with it. I hated it so much.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, I hated it with a passion. And so the children in the family, I gave this example to say that the children in the family are the stakeholders. They have created the menu with their mother. When the food, she said her children eat everything that's prepared. And they also participate. She has two sons. The older one is 12 or something. He participates in the cooking.
I'm coming back to you for closing thoughts, but 10 themes to ride around, just randomly picked. First is storytelling. Second one, popular culture. Third one is agenda setting. Fourth one is redefining the marketing scheme. The fifth is hope. The sixth one, social change. The seventh, resourcing young people. The eighth, your baby gender. The ninth, stakeholder engagement. And the tenth, guess what? A menu with kontumri.
I love palava sauce.
I can imagine.
And ebunobuno, give me ebunobuno
on any day.
With snails.
On any day. And that's the African woman.
And then I'm good to go.
Prof, sign up by telling us one thought that you want us to reflect on as we seek to bring about social change and the Africa that we seek.
I've been reflecting a lot on being somebody's neighbor. Like, what does it mean? You know, we have this, right now I think it's a bit more of a fiction than a fact about our hospitality, right? Ghanaians are so hospitable. We think about each other. And I think we do a good job with visitors and guests. The way people drive on the streets, and the entitled people and their big cars, and they are driving the opposite direction, they are this is on, with zero thought about the effect it can have on. That's like, you know, you're not thinking about your neighbor. And, you know, whether you are a religious person or not, I don't think any society can develop without the Shona people say, I'm well if you are well. Good morning, how are you? Oh, I'm well. If you are well, then I'm okay. Mm. We have
is
to...
Is that relatable to the Ubuntu concept?
It's related to Ubuntu.
Kind of?
Right? We are growing together. If my neighbor is not doing well, eventually I will not do well. You know, maybe not immediately, but eventually I will not do well because the society has to do. So the growing inequalities in our societies globally and in Ghana, it's not good for those who think they are the top. Eventually, what happened in the French Revolution? They say off with her head, right? Marie Antoinette said that people say they are hungry, they can't get bread, they should eat cake. Because you are eating cake. So you are wondering why people are hungry, they should just eat cake. They say bread self, they no see some. So if people get angry enough, me, I think I'm a nice person. But if I'm driving around down the street and there's some hungry boy, he doesn't know that Auntie Akosua is a nice person. He can stop me and take my bag, right? Got to think of the least of them. That should be our benchmark. How are we taking care of the most vulnerable? We don't have a social security system. So we are all subsidizing the state by taking care of hospital bills that the National Health Insurance is not working anymore for, right? So
a bit more of neighborliness. Neighborliness,
caring for the other person. It's not easy. And again, it has to be intentional. It has to be intentional because as I get up in the morning, I've got my to-do list. I'm going here, I'm doing that. Do I stop on the way? Somebody is looking for help, right? But tomorrow will be me. And I'll be praying that somebody will stop and take care of me.
5 years ago during the COVID, I drove under the Kanda overpass and there's a turning that you really can't go back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And just when I turned, there were probably about 15 young people.
Wow.
Hungry. Just saying, give me something to eat. And I stopped because I just couldn't drive away. And as I paused and I rolled down my glass, the question was, do you give it to the person on the left or on the right? And I gave it to the person on one side. When I turned, there was this mobile who said, how could you? It should have been me. And while I thought about that small boy, I looked in my driving
room. There was a car behind me. Coming at top speed.
Woman. No. Because I had stopped, she had to stop. But my glasses were originally rolled up. Her glasses were both rolled down. And I couldn't tell what would happen to her. So while I looked at the small boy, I thought about the woman. And so I drove off. And the guy started chasing me. And I was thinking, I have no choice but to move because of the woman.
Mm-hmm.
But the further away I move, the more that young person gets disappointed and says, you made a big mistake. I need this more than him. It stayed in my thoughts for a long time. Prof, Akosua Adumakwo Ampofo, please promise to come again.
Anytime you call me, I'm coming.
Thank you so much.
I really enjoyed this. And this, you know, sets us all thinking about what else we can do. And congratulations on the good work you're doing.
17
years. Yeah, 17 years. And I'm excited about what I'm seeing. It's a contribution, an important one.
Thank you.
And when I start my podcast, I'll call you.
Please do. And to sign off, I promised to talk about the multiplier effect, and I forgot it, but one thing is certain. It didn't start this big. It started with a small idea, but we stuck with it through thick and thin. And today, when you look at hundreds of thousands of young people who have interfaced in any way with what you've done, there's so much fulfillment that money can buy.
And then they are, what do they say, giving forward?
Absolutely. Some of them are visiting the clubs now themselves as spokespersons. And you're like, really? You just got your help 6 months ago and now you are already an ambassador talking to other people. It's on.